Get ready.
How do you know I'm not going to kill you with it?
Okay.
Yeah, we're fine.
I'm here.
Alright. So, welcome to another episode of the Cybernauts Cast. We didn't do an introduction last time because we never got around to it. But, we're into week two of Kawajiri Month. With this week, we're going to talk about Cyber City 080. Probably one of the greatest of Kawajiri stuff, and the more tamer, I should say.
Yeah, definitely. It is. I don't know that there was any nudity in this show.
There was, like, the one hooker chick at, like, the third OVA, and that was it, but she didn't do anything.
Nah, she was just sitting there.
Yeah. But anyways, for introductions, we got our co-host from the One Pixel Jump podcast, One Pixel Jump himself, and the man, Double Gomez.
Go us!
That's right. Did you ask him to call you the man?
I remembered it from last...
You every other- I'm going to refer you to that from
me
now on.
The man.
I was trying to do the whole, from the Macross, do you remember Love Dub, or like, Roy Fokker shows up, and then Hikaru's like, the man!
Is that, Clash of the Bionoids?
Yeah, the Clash of the Bionoids dub.
That was really terrible.
That had to be the most awful rendition of the movie ever.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how they even got that movie. And there's
it was
no
a
way
fluke.
In hell, yeah, there's no way in hell it could ever be official licensed here in the States, at least as of this time period. But so, and of course, we got the regular cast with Mazionic Freak, John Jones, Vimon Josh, and Steve.
Yo.
Steve, you're going to talk about, real quick, the on-live going bankruptcy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little bit.
Yeah, this came up like yesterday afternoon. I was going ahead and checking things out, and come to find out, there was a big rumor about online the gaming service going bankrupt, and that everybody was walking out with their boxes and such. Of course, the PR department over there decided to go ahead and try to get fire support and get everything under control. But yesterday, due to a reliable source, there were people walking out of online's headquarters with boxes in their hands. And then, of course, and this was like all over the place, blogs. You know, it was hitting the blogs like shit on a fan. However, though, later on during the evening and such, it was told that basically what was told to us, to the general public, that they weren't going out of business, they weren't bankrupt, they had been reacquired. Is what was said. It was reacquired, and what was going to happen is once this substantially powerful backer gets the other companies involved, the other investors that are involved in this, that online will be hiring back a majority of their staff. But at this time, though, I think what it was bottom line, online service basically bit off a little bit more than they could chew.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I know there's two different kinds of bankruptcy. The file, like, one of them is corporate restructuring, and the other one is pretty much like a buyout kind of thing, like what Circuit City did. Do you know exactly what kind of bankruptcy they filed under?
I don't. I tried looking on that one.
I'm thinking it might be the latter, because like Kmart and Best Buy have filed bankruptcy, but it's more of a restructuring thing, and those companies still exist. So,
and that's what a lot of people are thinking at this point. Mm-hmm. It's just at this point in time. I mean, you got to think back about 2 years ago, back at E3, when Steve Perlman said that this might be the streaming technology might be a really good thing and might be here really quick and everything. You thought that costs and issues with lags and things like that would be a thing of the past because of, fiber optics and everything. This really wasn't the case. High production streaming, games like, Call of Duty, Rage, Diablo 3, streaming, these, just streaming, through cloud technology, it really would put a hamper on the servers. Online may be the future, but I honestly don't see a console in the TARDIS at this point in time.
All right. Was that all you had to say on it real quick?
For now, yep. That's okay. The report from me.
Yeah, we'll find out more about this coming up. I remember Daft saying how, like, E3, they made a huge deal about it, like, 2 years ago. I don't even remember this. I never even heard of this until, like, you told me about it.
It was pretty cool. It was a good panel. Presentation and everything. Definitely an awesome presentation. But
all right.
Honestly, with the way technology is right now and such, I mean, yeah, it's there, but it's not affordable, and the technology is not at, up there at that stage right now where you can go ahead and do, like, DirectX streaming and such like that with these high-end games. I mean, you'd have to have a very high, high-end workstation with a very high-end, a 5 gig video card or something like that for it to go ahead and handle these. I would think, maybe 5 gigs is a bit much. I would say a 3 to 4. You need something that powerful to go ahead and keep up with the streaming and such. And the data flow, again, with the way technology is right now, you'd have to have a serious business class type of connection to go ahead and maintain, something that cool. I just don't think it's going to be really, it's just not it's feasible, but it's not practical at this point, right now.
Yeah. All right. I've actually got some lead-ins to start up our review. John, remember how we were talking about Manos, the Hands of Fate, like maybe a couple days ago?
Uh-huh.
I saw that Mystery Science Theater today of that movie. Bad movie.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Mystery Science Theater is able to redeem it, but like I told you that they made that iOS game based off Manos, The Hands of Fate, which is a good game, but anything in that game does not exist in the movie because the game is obviously a better retelling of the movie.
Is it even the same plot or like...
They take certain things from it. Like, there's the opening where, like, you got the crippled guy who, like, runs the place.
Torgo.
Or the hotel thing. And he's just... and you have to fight him. But you shoot him, like, 20 times. He's like, okay, the master will let you in.
That's Torgo, right?
Do what?
That's Torgo, right?
Yeah, Torgo. But you figured, like, if people who made that game, they could have put that effort into Cyber City 080, the video game, because Cyber City 080 is pretty much the anime version of a video game, from what we've been watching, or at least the way I take it.
Yeah, it's got the boss battle with the vampire and everything, you know?
I know, it's so perfect.
Yeah, with, like, Dracula?
With, in Space Castlevania.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not even just that he becomes a vampire. He even gets Bela Lugosi Dracula hair.
Dracula 2030.
It's not really Christopher Lee Dracula. It is more of a Bela Lugosi in this. Because Christopher Lee wouldn't be like that crippled, I don't think. It'll have more hair.
The point at which his veins are more prominent than the bones in his hands.
Yes.
That's how old he was.
Yeah. Another thing was, David, I got some pretty cool in the mail today. I got the Pat Labor, the movie, limited collector's edition for off Amazon for like $11.
Are we going to review that someday?
What?
Are we going to review that someday?
Yeah, we'll have to review Pat Labor, but dude, check it. They've only made 10,000 of these box sets, and it's got like the limited numbers of which number you get. Take a guess exactly what number I got for my box set.
7.
Dude, I got 808 of 10,000.
Oh,
kind of
nice.
Like Cyber City 808.
Look at
that. Is some insane luck.
I know. Talk about like the planets being aligned and like the huge coincidence and how this leads up. This cannot happen at a perfect time.
I remember watching this show the first time and being very confused as to why they picked 808 instead of 080, since it would sound the same. And it wasn't until Jake pointed it out to me that it's supposed to be Cyber City 080808.
Well, it takes place in the year 2808 in the future, and like 080 is actually the future Tokyo. Because apparently in the history books, Tokyo used to be called 080. Or at least what I remember from
in real life, or just in this in real life, or just in this series.
Maybe that's the idea. Like Tokyo used to be known as Edo, so maybe it's supposed to be like Big Edo.
Oh, I've heard Edo. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So they've actually kind of did their history on this, but
I thought Edo was like a period in Japanese history or something.
It's both, and don't take what I say as fact. I'm using my limited knowledge of Japanese, having studied it for like 20 minutes in high school and watching a lot of cartoons.
Yeah, I just know that
Edo was a noodle cart.
I just know the Edo period thing from Kenshin.
That's right. Everything I know about Japanese history, I learned from Kenshin.
Yeah.
That is a very informational show.
Comparatively, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't mess up on it too bad. It's just that not everybody could breathe fire out of their stomachs and, you know, be able to battle people who can set themselves on fire.
And burp out of their pinky.
Have you read any of the new Kenshin manga?
New I didn't Kenshin know the name. Manga?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about a new Kenshin manga.
Well, there's like a movie that's coming out in Japan or something, so Watsuki.
Yeah, there's live action. I saw this earlier, too, as well.
Watsuki
I knew about
is
the live-action Kenshin movie, that he made a companion manga for it.
Yeah, Watsuki is doing a monthly manga now again, and it's like a retelling.
Oh, cool.
I do want to see the live-action movie.
I'm interested in that, because whenever they do a live-action rendition of an anime, I always want to know who's going to play who.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when I heard that they were going to make a live-action Mazinger Z, I was like, who's going to play Koji?
I don't know enough Japanese actors for that to really affect me.
They resurrect Toshiro Mifune from the dead because he was in all those Akira Kurosawa movies.
I still got to see the live-action Yamato movie, which I heard that was really good.
Did they do like a live-action Harlock or something, too?
They've made some CGI Harlock, like 5-minute video clips, but they haven't done a live action one yet. And they're working on a live action Space Adventure Cobra, supposedly.
Yeah, I saw there's a Wikipedia page for that, isn't there? You showed me it. Jacob,
Yeah, I remember that.
I'll have to look that
no,
up.
No. The thing that I remember that supposedly coming out later this year is the live action Guy King movie that I heard about a couple years ago.
I remember there was a time on the FK forums where I posted that little teaser they did for it where Chick pilots a robot and then the trailer's over. There's literally no information in that. Is there going to be a live-action Grandizer now, too?
Can we just start having like nothing but live-action super robot shows instead of other crap?
Well, you know, there's supposed to be another Dragon Ball Z coming out too here within this year.
Live action? Really?
Yeah, there's a threat for a new Dragon Ball.
Do you not pay attention? Okay.
Like a sequel to that Evolution?
Yeah, I'm face palming here. You're not listening. You're not looking down at the chat box, are you?
No, I'm not.
We're not going to watch a video while we're recording.
But I understand that. I saw a thread on SA for the new Dragon Ball. They are freaking out because not only is it new Dragon Ball, but it is new canon Dragon Ball. It apparently contradicts the existence of Dragon Ball GT, and everyone is super excited about that.
Wait, is Toriyama like involved in this?
Yeah, he is.
Well, then you know it's good. So.
Well, of course.
Other than that other director for the American one, like the ghost face killer, who whatever his name was.
Oh, that was such a... I saw Dragon Ball Evolution in theaters.
I did too.
After work, and I knew what I was paying money for.
I was disappointed because it was not nearly as retarded as I thought it was going to be. I mean, it was pretty bad.
It was worse than what I thought it was going to be.
It wasn't, like, entertainingly bad, even. It was just...
No, that was what I was so disappointed by. Like, it was, like, normal bad, not fun bad.
Chow Yun-fat just did not give a crap in that movie. You could tell he just showed up on set and just half-crapped anything regarding acting. Like, it was laughably bad at how bad he was acting in that movie.
Was he...
Chow Yun-fat, yeah.
Was he Roshi?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that we noted when I walked out of the movie with my friends is that all of the lines that they gave that guy who played Goku are like lines that Goku would say, but the way that he says them makes them sound sarcastic, where Goku would be earnest about those things, like, oh, you fucked up your car, and that's not sarcasm. Goku would be literally concerned about the fact that you fucked up your car.
I don't know. I don't remember most of that movie, thank God. But
That's reasonable.
Let's talk about something good, like Cyber City 08-0,
pretty good.
It's got Space Prison, which they take prisoners from that, from Space Prison, to go fight crime. And the city of 08-0 has the Cyber Police.
The Cyber Police, where you have the Battle Royale collar on your neck, where your police boss can pop your collar, as he calls it, at any time.
You know, imagine trying to work with him if he ran like a pizza shop. He's like, you better make that pizza delivery in 30 minutes, or your head's going to be filing a divorce from your body. And he like runs to the door like, please take it quick, and then you just hear it go.
I'm here to deliver your pizza, and then the guy's head explodes. Oh my god!
He'll just like drive by the house and just chuck it out this double axle front wheel drive car, and then speed off. And he's like, "I made the damn delivery. Now take off my collar, like undetonate my collar right now." And he's like, "Okay,
no, so you didn't follow pizza order, so your pizza sentence is extended by 10 years."
I didn't hear you say, "Have a nice day."
Oh, because unlike last time where we could not find the Goku Midnight Eye dub, this time we got the dub. And I kept a list of particularly notable manga swears.
Oh, yeah.
The swearing in this is so creatively well done. It flows so well.
This is up there with Madball.
Yeah, I was going to say, some of the times where swearing is done in this, I have a thought on Madball 34, which is Madball 34 was created by Kazuo Koke because he knew that manga was a company and that they needed an anime that was theirs to dub. But even in this, they actually do the swearing kind of – like it's not always stupid, although there are certain specific curses that are a little bit weird, like – in the second episode, there's a point where somebody says, where is it in here?
The robot talking about going fucking itself.
The robot. Yeah, I wrote that down in my notes. Says, robot does not know how to fuck something.
That's the best part.
Well, no, remember, it knows how, it just knows that it can't.
That's right, yeah.
Your swearing logic is illogical. I don't understand why human beings say words like this to me. Shut up.
There's also, There's also another one in there that's in the first episode after they go up the skyscraper, and the guy who's talking to Sengoku, who's about to kill him, says, "Be sure to say hello to Jesus for me."
Oh, yeah.
Well, I never. The damn finger lock thing on the gun actually works for once. Let's try an experiment. I'll see if the gun goes off in my hands or goes off against your head. Don't worry if it goes off. You ain't going to know fuck all about it.
There's also a point in the – it's in the second episode when I can't – I always pronounce this guy's name wrong and call him Golgo, like he's Golgo 13.
I think it's – yeah, it's like they say Golgo, but it's like goggles or something.
It's Gogol, I think, like G-O-G-O-L.
Yeah, but there's a point at which he's with that his old partner lady who was used to trick him into fighting the military robot, and she leans out the window to shoot the military chopper
helicopter
thing, and she says, "Eat this, dick splash."
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that one too.
But pretty much the first OVAV is like what I consider the anime version of Die Hard. Because they're in a skyscraper. Like, you can probably take... You can take, like, that first OAV and make, like, the Die Hard movie trailer with it as an AMV. And it'll go well. I've thought about doing that. I need to.
That would be kind of cool. Have an anime
Die Hard. It can be done, though. Yeah.
But who would be Alan Rickman?
Alan Rickman would have to be the programmer dude in this.
Wait, which programmer dude? The dude at the top of the skyscraper? Or
the guy who's alive, not Yamachi.
He's not as cool as Alan Rickman.
I was thinking he should be the dead guy.
Hans Gruber as the computer programmer in this.
The computer programming zombie who shoots.
See, this goes well to Die Hard because, like, even in Die Hard, Alan Rickman takes John McClane's gun away, and then he's like, "Stupid Hans, no bullets!" And then the long-haired German dude shows up and, like, guns him down on the roof or something.
Yeah.
So Kawajiri paid very well much attention to the first Die Hard movie for this OAV. It aligns so well together.
It really does.
So the first one is
collar part, but that's whatever.
The first one is Die Hard. The third one is Dracula. What's the second one?
That's a good question.
I think the second one is
Bubblegum Crisis because they fight a boomer.
I was thinking more Rambo maybe.
Because of the big gun.
Yeah,
that's what big ass.
Yeah, it's a one man army kind of thing.
Yeah, I can see that.
MD Geist.
the acting was better, so I can't really compare it too well. But there is the military involved.
We're gonna have to do an episode on Geist someday.
Dude, we're gonna have to do a whole month on Kuichi Ohada. Why don't I just ante it up? I mean, there's a freaking
Let's see, MD Geist 1, MD Geist 2, Geno Cyber, and I don't know anything else he's ever made.
Cybernetics,
Angel
Guardian.
Blade.
What?
I'm almost certain he did Angel Blade.
I thought Obari did Angel Blade.
I did too, but he did. He only did like some of the animation for it.
Well, Obari isn't a detailed genius when it comes to mecha designs, but when it comes to directing things, it's kind of more miss and some hit. I love this Fatal Fury stuff.
Yeah, some hit, as in the only thing that was a hit was Bubblegum Crisis.
And Fatal Fury. I'm counting those two.
I haven't seen the Fatal Fury. Okay, only the movie.
The OVAs, I like them. Like, they're not as strong directing and story-wise, but, I mean, like, for 45 minutes, it's well worth it. Like, the Fatal Fury OVAs are better than any of the fighting AMVs or OAVs they've made. Like, any of the other fighting animes they've done is it's pure garbage compared to Fatal Fury. That's just my opinion, though.
It's kind of pure.
Well, that was just odd.
A little bit.
What happened?
Not sure.
Yeah, no, for me the call went out, but now I can hear everyone, so.
Well, Dustin's gone.
Yeah.
Or.
Okay, it sounds like we're back.
Yeah. Now, I think we can get a general overview of what Cyber City 080 is about. Or at least, like, the general story, because the three episodes are sort of each a character episode for the three main characters.
Yeah, like, it's each episode has its own, like, you know, it's an episode designed for the main characters. I like to say that I think the second one is probably my personal favorite, or maybe the best. Like, it's not, there's none of these, none of the episodes or any of them are bad at all. There's not a one episode that's worse than the other. But for personal favorites, I like the second episode just a tad more than the other ones. But it's like by a hair.
I don't know. My favorite one is still the first one.
Largely
because of when Sengoku shoves his gun into the face of a robot and shoots it till it dies.
Yeah. Well,
when he jams it through that robot's eye.
Yep.
Yeah.
But anyways, like, it's a. Well, he also defeats Alan Rickman, the dead guy, at the bottom because he came up with a program that it can only hit targets if they jump at certain angles. But they didn't compensate for the fact that you can just walk up to it and, like, blow it up.
Well, because at a point, the skeleton programmer zombie thing kind of gets the idea and actually does hit Sengoku a few times. It's just at that point he doesn't let it affect him anymore.
It didn't calculate fast enough by the time he got Sengoku, said he was going to upload him straight to hell.
Yeah, I kept that line too, where it's in here somewhere. Adios, bozo. I'm downloading you straight into hell.
Yes.
I've got my USB gun, and I'm uploading you to the suffering server.
I think he used the GTA actually with a USB adapter to it. So, like, oh, I love. Yeah. Like, the thing about this is that everyone has a personal weapon. Like, you know, Sengoku has the Magnum.
He has the gun from Killer 7. It is a scope. When I first saw it, I thought it was a scoped pistol.
And then also, Benton has, like, the monofilament wire GTA, but it also hooks up with his ring, too, which that's pretty cool, too. Which, I guess with Benton, like, I suppose he was supposed to be originally a woman, but they were like, no, let's make him a man.
Maybe they thought it would be more appropriate because they thought it'd be weird if Benson was in the same prison if he was a woman. I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, they don't give him like a feminine gay voice. He talks like a regular dude. He's just like in drag. But Benson's a cool character though. I mean, Go ahead.
Well, Benson seems to be the one who is just the best at normal combat, because almost every time you see him, he cuts something up with his monofilament wire, where Sengoku is more of like the rugged action hero, John McClane style kind of guy, where he's tough as nails, but he's not refined. And then Gogol is the programmer, but also the really big Mad Max biker guy with a neon pink mohawk.
Yeah, like Well, the second episode, I guess we pretty much ran through the first episode. I guess we can cover a few things the best parts of the first episode is the fact that the skyscraper they're in travels or goes all the way up to freaking space. But it's held together by some gyros that's able to balance it on, like, an 8x8 square of some kind. And it's able to keep the building in place. And then once that's hacked, you see the thing gradually fall over. It's like, you know, the people who design this anime don't know anything about building designs, but who cares?
That's not real. Well, what I love about that is that the building falls over pretty significantly, and it's a big ass building too.
Yeah.
But once they restore order to the building, there's not a problem anymore. The building just sort of rights itself, or at least stops falling over.
Yeah, it doesn't fall over as much. Like, it's able to correct itself pretty quick.
And gravitational compensation.
Okay, and then there's also the line where, like, oh, go ahead.
The top half of it is in space, and because of that, that part of it is weightless.
Basically, yeah.
If it works.
Well, there's also the part where, like, we get to see how awesome Sengoku is with the ladies, when, like, that one cop girl is stuck in the elevator, and he's like, how many people are in there? And she's like, oh, like 10 of us, and she's like, hope no one gets diarrhea.
Sengoku, master of words.
Yeah. I guess if someone had to go, they can, like, be able to pry the doors open a little bit to stick their buttholes out of it if they had to go that bad. I mean, it's something. I don't know if there's a plan in there you can actually use the bathroom in, but...
Well, considering how tall the building is, there's probably, like, this emergency airlock toilet, just in case.
Yeah, you figure that the elevator designers came
or
up with that.
Or a bad box of Ziplocs.
Considering how far up the elevator goes, and later on, not only in this one where there's a space elevator, but also in
the third
episode,
one.
In episode 3, we see the elevator has like 600 to 700 floors.
But it's like one like circular tube that just goes straight into like where the mortuary is.
Yeah.
Like where the carbon freezing hibernation place is in space. Like, there's got to be a bunch of these little swamp
employee database.
The what?
The former employee database.
That's true.
We don't ever fire our employees. We just go ahead and chuck them in the ice.
We need them later.
Well, we keep them in case we need their specialty later.
It's kind of like being overstaffed. It's like hiding an overstaffed problem, but you're just stuffing them in lockers and like cryo tubes. Then they don't have the heart to fire people, so they're just like, oh well, they had to take an extensive leave, and we're just going
to
put them.
This is your permanent vacation.
You're on an Antarctic vacation, man.
It's not bad.
Well, they also got a room with cybernetic saber-toothed tigers that shoot lasers out of their mouths. Now you know you're watching a Kawajiri anime because some animal or life form has got a laser in its mouth and it's going to shoot at you.
And it has to be something that crawls along on two fours. Until yes. I see the Kawajiri anime that has the laser shooting ostrich.
Oh God, I hope so. It's like anything that he makes. It's like, please add somewhere in whatever you're making, even in Ninja School 2, that someone has to shoot a laser out of their mouth. Doesn't matter if it's a 5-year-old kid or a robot in a ship. It's got to have somewhere in that, and whatever you make has to have a laser coming out of someone's mouth. Because it's not a true Kawajiri film or master.
Doesn't even have to be like a real person. It could be like a statue, laser out of the mouth.
Yeah,
how about a pellet shooting platypus with a mouth cannon?
If it can shoot both pellets and lasers, then yes.
Laser filled with pellets that are also lasers. It's like Macross, where the missiles where the missiles break open and there are more missiles, and those break open and they're lasers.
Yeah.
Magic missile!
At the end of the first episode also, like, there's the dub line where, the girl asks Sengoku out, and he's got, like, 300 different million reasons not to say yes. But he wants to say yes anyways.
It's like,
anyways.
How about you take me out to dinner? Well, I can't because I'm tired and I'm drunk and I want to take a nap and I'm broke and leave me alone.
I'm pissed off and I forgot it's raining outside and I forgot to bring my umbrella. I don't have enough lunch money for today. And she's like,
here's
I'll take
the ultimate excuse.
I'll pick you up at 8.
Dude, you see me hanging around Benson all the time. What did you think?
Yeah, I'm with 3 dudes. It's a total sausage fest between us.
Exactly.
Benton's kind of our half female to go person because we don't really have a real female or emotional support.
Besides, he looks good in drag.
That he does.
He's got some sweet fingernails. I mean, look at those things. All nice.
Those
should have been,
let me tell you.
Those should have been like monofilament fingernails, like in
would have been like in a maybe Caligari thought that would have been a Wicked City reference.
Yeah, Wicked City. I thought it happened in Johnny Mnemonic, but I know in Johnny Mnemonic they had monofilament like rings or something. Yet that movie came out after this. What?
Yeah, you're right. It's all cross references.
Isn't that like a book first though, or something? Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah, it's a William Gibson novel it's a short story. They got made into that movie. And then apparently the only movie that's coming out from that might be working on is Neuromancer, which I would love to read that book and see that movie.
I've read the book Neuromancer before. It's very weird. It's a bit of a mind trip the first time you read it.
I've only checked out the first couple of chapters in that, or not chapters, but the first couple of pages when I was at a friend's house. And apparently the version of the book that they have is worth like a ton of money, but they probably don't even know it. But, like, I remember I woke up and it was there, and I was just kind of, like, reading a few pages before I went downstairs and got breakfast. But this was a couple years ago.
Winter Meets Your Daddy.
That's totally a book that's worth reading. The first episode's pretty straight-laced action. I mean, other than the point in which there is the integrated zombie into the computer system of this building, there's nothing... Nothing especially bizarre about it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bizarre stuff.
I feel like Cyber City 08 has a progression of bizarreness. I mean, not like really high level stuff that you might expect out of Kawajiri, but we go from computer hacking to psychic robots that are made out of dead people to vampires.
And then all the little stuff in between. Like the second episode, we got like, where apparently Goggles likes reading Russian books. And it gets hassled by, like, the military officers, and he's, like, just dicking with them. He's just like, I don't remember ordering pizza, or what seems to be the officer problem.
I love his stakeout semi-truck with the whole library in the back of it.
Yeah.
He's got this high-culture room just in the back of it. I expected him to pull out some brandy and swirl it around. Not because he wanted to drink it.
He's like one of those Howard or... the Playboy guy, like he's in that whole like red robe with like the scarf going on. It's like, I don't recall meeting a woman, but if I did, I'll let you know.
You have her.
He's got the pipe, the little wooden pipe persona. But because he doesn't make much on his convicted criminal turned police officer salary, it's like a bubble pipe.
came from the finest dollar store.
I assure you, this is a Hasbro original.
I like how the fact that the truck can jump off from one building to the next, like down below, and like not get screwed up badly. Because he makes the jump at one point, and then like it looks like the trailer's going to overturn, and then just straightens out, which is pretty remarkable, actually. Let's see.
The action sequence. Oh, something I noted about the action.
Oh no, go ahead.
Something I noted about the action sequences in the show is that this show had a real thing for stabbing people in the stomach. Like every bite sequence, all the main characters get stabbed in the stomach at least once.
That is true. Yeah, somebody's always getting stabbed in the stomach.
Yeah, this is especially bad for Gogol when he fights the military's psychic boomer robot thing, because not only does he get stabbed in the stomach by that thing's extendable hands, but he does twice in the same place.
I like how the one weakness of defeating the robot is the fact that like metal clanging it against other metal, and then like Varsus like plays it over a loudspeaker on his battle royale collar. And pretty much kicks the crap out of it, and then he uses the hand like jab it right in the general's throat and then finish him off.
Yeah. Well, what I love about that is that Gogol weakens the robot after he's already been blinded because the goggle thing that he wears across his eyes are broken, and he whacks it by swinging around an iron girder that he is strong enough to swing around like a bat. He hits it once and it gets stunned, and then he realizes that it's the weakness of the thing, so he gets Varsus to play it back, and then he just starts punching the shit out of the robot.
Yeah, it's like, I like, because the ending of the second one is actually like a really good climactic battle. Like, it just flows together so well.
Yeah, I do like the end.
I was going to point out, like, when Benten and Sengoku go to the military base to sneak in, and then Benten gives Sengoku, like, the mines. He's like, here, plant these around. And Sengoku's like, F this. And he chucks it in the water. He's like, I'm on my smoke break for 6 hours.
I love that moment when Benten notes that they're going to be stuck in there for 6 hours was the moment that I realized that the episodes were going to be character-based. Because I was like, okay, so how are they going to sort of occupy Sengoku and Benton's time while Gogol gets all of the important plot relevance? Oh, they're just going to lock him in a room. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to be stuck there.
Well, Sengoku made sure he wasn't going to do jack in that room. He's like, fine, you can plant the mines around. I'm just going to watch you. That was a
remember,
idea.
It's like later he wakes up when the door's finally open. So he was just taking a nap.
Yeah.
And he said as much. In order for them to get into the best trap ever, where these military men are going to execute them by forcing them into some sort of Castlevania-esque crushing machine.
No, they're trying to force them into that room, into the cell from Ricky O.
Oh, The prison.
We watched that yesterday.
I actually got that movie off Amazon for like $10. So
that movie is awesome.
It's actually one of the top three favorite movies of my favorite movies. I think it actually might be number one.
Yeah,
I don't blame you.
That movie is really cool to just watch, but they try to force them into that, but then Benson blows the bombs that he sets, which causes a blackout, not only turning off the crushing machine, but also turning off all the lights. And I'm sure Sengoku did something during this time, but Benson decides to use this time to use his monofilament wire to eviscerate all of the army people.
I like the one move. Yeah, he does it on the general guy, and the guy's head just like rockets off his neck.
It pops off like he was a bottle of champagne.
Yeah. It doesn't fall in an angle. It goes straight up.
That was pretty good. There's somehow one guy left, and Sengoku says, "Either you tell me about this military robot, or we're throwing you in that crusher thing."
Which I assume they threw him in the crusher thing anyways, after he told him everything.
Well, yeah, I just wouldn't. It would be out of character for Sengoku to not do that.
Yeah. Well, there's also, like, what was it, the beginning of the second episode, Benton tracks those, like, smuggled body arms dealer, the Asian guy. And then there's that one black dude who was, like, who got, like, the box guy cut open. He's like, oh, shit.
I remember that scene because of the way it starts. You've got this very stereotypically dressed Chinese man outside of his very stereotypical Chinese building. And one guy drops or, like, spills the box that he was carrying, and it's filled with arms.
Yeah.
It's like cut up dead arms.
And feet. You gotta have all of your
appendages. Are there any other types?
Pretty much limbs.
Apparently that's where the military was getting the dead bodies. Chinese.
But here comes the real question. Is it original recipe or Cajun style?
Cajun style bodies? Well, if you can get it that way.
They had an import from Louisiana.
China's not killing its own people. You'll kill the people from Louisiana.
They're importing people from different countries.
They're like going to foreign countries to dig up bodies from graveyards. You got like these Chinese bootleggers like trying to cross into Russia, and they're just going into graveyards digging people up.
No, it's like on Spike TV. Like you got that like they got like half the TV shows out now. It's like based in Louisiana. Like you got the Gator Hunters on History Channel, and they got the Rat Bastard show on Spike TV. So like I can imagine they're hunting for like gophers, and like a bunch of Asians come out and just mow them down. Like, oh, we've got the Cajun bodies now to use to import.
So it's double translated. They're getting Chinese go to Louisiana to get bodies and then give them to the Japanese to put in their psychic robots. And the Japanese military buys these bodies up. It's like, oh, this body is terribly translated.
What's a rebel flag on this ankle doing there? We got to get rid of this.
Replace it with a Japanese flag, quick.
Who's I Love Mom, and what's this woman named Carla who's got an X over her name and says fourth wife?
Thinking about the flag, I just remembered, I love the office of the general guy who commissioned the, I also wrote the name down of it. It's the name of the psychic robots is Project MOLCOS, which stands for Maintain of Law Civinetic Organism Suath. The last one not actually being a word.
And the third to last one being a very bad translation.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the C in that, which stands for civinetic, is supposed to be cybernetic.
Cybernetic? I didn't really bother to read the English on that. I'm sure that was there, but when I watched this last night, I was kind of intoxicated a little bit, so I didn't bother to just pause it and look at it.
That one was so apparent that I couldn't help but want to read what it was. Like, I love the general's office, because it looks like what you'd expect a military officer's office to look like at first, because he's got the flag overhead and he's at his desk and the flag is behind him. But then it pulls back and his room is got a bunch of mounts of dinosaurs, including a T-Rex.
Well, what do you think they were originally trying to put into the psychic robot? It wasn't people.
They were going to make
wanted giant robot dinosaurs.
Psychic dinosaur robots.
They're going to make Dinobots, and then they're going to move on to making the actual Transformers.
That would have been awesome.
They were working on they're working on a prototype for Grimlock.
Now that episode is cool. It's got an interesting story. It's actually the only episode that I'd say really has a conspiracy in it, because you've got Gulgul is set up from the beginning where they get the his old partner lady back into action because they needed a reason for him to fight the robot. I don't know why they specifically singled out him to fight their military robot, considering that in the other episodes that aren't as about him, he's primarily the computer guy.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, I think in Broken Arrow, there was a tech guy who was like an ex-Navy SEAL, and like some girl was like, I only seen like the end of that stupid movie, but it was like this guy sneaks up on this girl and he's like, you thought I was a computer nerd. And like, I'm ex-Navy SEAL, bitch. And he just starts whooping on her.
He's really tough. He can seriously handle that machine gun. And apparently, back when he was with his old partner, they at one point hijacked a satellite and held it for ransom.
Oh yeah, they're like, he was like, yeah, that was pretty fun. That was the best job we ever did. Did you ever look at the credits for like their convictions and stuff? Like, it's every one of them went to prison for murder and assault. So they obviously know how to handle a weapon or some kind of weapon that can kill other people. So for him being the tech guy to, you know, use a machine gun like that, he's got experience.
Well, that was something that the military guy said that they wanted him for, was that he was both a hardened criminal and a cyber police trained officer. So, like, he's the perfect man for testing our stretchy robot thing. I like their boss, too, because their boss is a complete prick.
Oh, yeah.
He seems
Hasegawa, that's it.
He seems to really, really delight in taunting them about the fact that he can blow their necks off at any time, which is apparently done by timer, because whenever he says, you've got so much time to finish this mission, then he'll push a button on his lighter, which is also the detonator, I guess, and then it'll start
the
counting
comm device.
Yeah, everything does. Everything works on one button.
Do the job, or I'll go ahead and make your heads pop off like Mexican Coke bottles.
He says as much so. You said that line earlier about him, your neck is going to, your body is going to divorce your head, or something like that.
Your head's going to divorce your body, or I'll make sure that happens. And then, like, Sengoku's reply is like, you'll play a hell of a lot in alimony.
So, in this one, are we supposed to be rooting for the boss or the Japanese military guy? Because they both seem like dicks.
They're both dicks, yes. But the Japanese military is slightly more dick,
I guess.
Well, I mean, Hasegawa is a dick, but he looks out for his men. Like, as long as they don't fail him, he's got their backs, especially in this case, even though it's really hard to see it.
He's
right.
Always,
it's
like,
all
adding
matter
to
of
their
who
sentences.
Sucks it harder.
Do what, John?
He's definitely the military in this case.
He's always, like, adding to their sentences and threatening them and everything. He's not really sympathetic at all.
No,
I think he wants to keep him around.
That's especially true in the first episode, because Sengoku saves the day by destroying the zombie programmer integrated into the building system.
Yeah,
but
then
end,
he gets an extra 10 years.
Just because he disobeyed, like, one order that was kind of not a good order in the first... Well, it was a good order, but Sengoku... Because what happens is Hasegawa orders him to kill the guy who was causing all the problems in the first place, but it's after Sengoku has fallen into like a fiery pit nowhere near that guy. So.
Yeah, but then the guy winds up dying anyway, so it all works out in the end.
In a pretty simple way, because he just sort of falls out of the building. Although that's a pretty big fall. I'm surprised they didn't show his death, considering that they show one of the deaths of Vampire Guy in the third episode when he gets sucked out into space.
We should probably move on to the third episode, but there's really not much to talk about other than like the lady that's like in the silver like one leg jumpsuit thing, which apparently I think she might have been a character from the Goku Midnight Eye manga, but John read everything and he said she wasn't in there, so
I might have just forgotten.
She's not really a substantial character. She shows up twice, and apparently she knows Benton from their past. And the first time she shows up...
There's no exposition on that.
Yeah, she shows up and he's like, stay out of my business or I'm going to kill you. And he's like, no, I'll kill you. And then she leaves. And then later on she shows up. He's riding in his car. Yeah. She shows up on her hover Segway.
And then they have a bat, like, he's in the middle of the road, and it's only advantage to winning, like, a head-on, like, you know, showdown in the middle of the intersection of a road. It was, like, the truck's behind him, which blinds her, and he's able to get the shot. And then he's,
despite the fact that she had her targeting system on. And it probably the only oddly, I mean, even if you consider this oddly sexual by Calegary Sanders, is that he managed to shoot her right in the boob.
Oh, yeah.
But she just was like, oh, I'm dead. And then that just never comes up ever again. No, I think the real meat of the Benson episode is the line that he says to Sengoku about vampires and the fight in Space Dracula.
But it that they don't sparkle?
No, there's no Twilight vampires in this, thank God. This is before Twilight.
Yeah, but I love that.
That's how vampires should be. But yeah, it was like, you wouldn't know a goddamn vampire if it went up and bit you at the end of your dick.
He drives off.
The fun thing for me is that was actually my only experience with Cyber City 080 before actually watching it. So I thought this was a vampire hunting show at first. So I was very confused when watching the first episode.
And that sort of like goes along with the character-based episodes because Sengoku and Gogol aren't really that much in the episode as a whole. At the end, I think Sengoku has to raid the building, but then that doesn't do anything
because Gogol knocks him out.
Oh, that's right. I remember. He's like, "I'm going to go arrest the guy," and then Gogol knocks him out and says, "Benson, you go deal with this shit. I know you can."
Yeah, because he was about to pull the trigger on him, and he's just like, if you don't go up there and win, I'll make sure I'll kill you. But even though Benton's going to get his neck blown off in like 20 minutes anyways. But hey, it was motivation. There really wasn't like too much crazy stuff that happened in this.
It's not until the very end. Because vampires are caused by a special virus, which... not only makes you immortal, but it also gives you psychic powers.
Yeah, you could be a psychic vampire.
Powers.
Which apparently, if you get launched into space, you can materialize naked and back into like the main area that you're at.
I love the transition between those two sequences because when he first becomes the vampire and he beats up the vampire girl and then Benson shows up. He's dressed in the long robe, and when he fights Benson, he gets a sword, and he's sort of teleporting around the room. I'm surprised he didn't shoot at fireballs. Yeah. But after Benson shoots him out of the airlock, in which case he explodes into confetti, and it looks like he turns into human confetti and floats out into space. He re-psychics himself back in, forms back into a complete person, and then just starts using a giant rifle.
That's like a pump-action rifle. It's like one of those, like, you know... It's kind of like one of those old-school, old-style, cock rifles, I guess.
Yeah.
Like the rifle... Like a Winchester.
Yeah, the Winchester. But then, of course, like there's at the end of Benton's G-Tay, he's got that antivirus thing to not make him a vampire and kill him off.
Yeah, Gogol made that. Like, he found a
He handed it to him before he
made it and put it into his G-Tay. Yeah. And I do like the way that it works because Benton shoots it out, and I had forgotten that the G-Tays could shoot their tips. And it pierces into his chest, so it's like he's getting a stake through the heart. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, the ending, I really like the ending to the third one too, because it's very emotional, and he gives the vampire girl a kiss before she sends her into space, and they had that monologue about, I'll remember you forever, and he's like, there is, you know, nothing lasts forever, not even the light, and it's got that music playing, and it just shows her drifting into space, and then the credits roll, and I'm like, that's a very touching scene.
Yeah, it's got a good good music to it too.
Yeah. I really like. I think that's like one of the better endings to all of this.
Yeah, I think the BGM did have a nice touch to it.
It did.
Each episode did have sort of its own different kind of ending, where Golgul has his sort of his action hero ending, and Sengoku has his I guess I gotta go on being a cop ending, where he sneaks on the edge of that building to arrest some guy.
Yeah,
it has that sort of emotional ending that's all sad.
We didn't talk about the very beginning of the first episode where, like, we get introduced to Sengoku and Varsis, like, in the car, and he's like, raise the drawbridge, and then Varsis is like, why? And he's like, because I told you to, damn it. And then, like, only for him to, like, jump over the bridge to land on, like, the helicopter to take out that guy who's got, like, a claw machine gun built in, which he uses it to stab his GTA into it to take him out. And then they land the helicopter, which he's able to do this all on a hangover. And he complains about it and goes home.
Which includes a really great line of, what are you doing out so late? It's way past your bedtime, motherfucker.
Well, he arrests him.
Yes.
Which is only going to kill him deep inside.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, we get introduced to Benton's, like, dark alleyway apartment, which I guess he just sleeps on the couch and gets drunk every night. Because, like, I don't think he has a bed. Which I thought that whole dark setup thing was really cool. The whole lighting and everything. Because you didn't really need too much to bring that effect.
And the only thing you can see is, like, the light from the fridge.
Yeah. And then you see him kicking it and, like, throw the milk down and everything and just, like, swears a bunch.
Yeah.
And then I thought he just hung out in the closet, just kind of like hung from the rod there.
The hallway closet or the bedroom closet? Or maybe it's like one of those closet. Maybe it's like that episode. It kind of reminds me of that episode of Futurama where like Bender rooms with or Fry rooms with Bender, and then Bender's like, "We have a closet. You want to put that plant in there?" And it's like the whole other room. And Bender's like, "Why would you want to live in the closet?"
I remember that. Looking over all these other bits of swearing stuff.
There's a whole YouTube video of like all the tidbits of the swearing in this, which I'll definitely use for like as a zinger for the end of this podcast, because it's such creative swearing. And this is actually published by CPM Manga, not Manga Entertainment.
Really? This was done by CPM? I was sure it was a manga one.
I have it. Yeah, it came from CPM, which I guess I don't know if they're trying to do it to compete with manga because of Madball and everything, but I think they did a very good job.
Yeah, they did. Like, I can't see
myself watching this in Japanese because the English is so well done.
Yeah, it's not bad. There are some swears in it that I did have to note. There's a point in which Golgul says that something is a real pain in the shitter because it's not hard enough to say ass. You have to say shitter. Although when he said that, I couldn't help but think he was saying, this is a real pain in the toilet. And there's one in the third episode, which I cannot tell what it is, but so I think it's Benten asked somebody at some point, something bothering you, shit witch?
Oh, I should note to you guys that I actually had Masao Moriyama autograph my Cyber City 080 DVD last year for Animazement.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, he looked at it, he's just like, it was like, holy crap, Cyber City, and I'm like, it's the best thing ever. and then I asked him, like, so what is Kawajiri working on? He's like, just a new Ninja Scroll, and that's all he really told me. Like, he had someone else interpret it for him, but he was a cool guy, and then apparently he was at this year's Animazement, so
I wonder if
he's going to be there for next year. I wrote a whole edited podcast about that when we first started doing our other podcast.
Yeah. Didn't they announce it since then? Ninja Scroll 2?
They did, but
yeah, so we broke the news on that, but no one noticed because
no one noticed because nobody knew we existed.
Yeah. kind of sad.
I'm looking forward to a new Ninja Scroll. I hope that it's more. I hope that they don't go too crazy on like references to the old one, and it's really just Jubei's story too.
Yeah, it's like it's all original, but the same craziness. Like apparently, Daryl Surratt wrote a whole interview with Kawajiri in this new issue of Otaku USA, which I kind of skimmed through. And like Kawajiri mentions the new Ninja Scroll in that regard, and like what people he's going to use in it or what's going to happen. The only thing I was able to catch up is somebody has a minigun, and I'm like, well, that's all I need to know.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. But Cyber City is actually, I think it's still cheap on Amazon, so if anybody's listening to this, pick this up and go watch it.
It's pretty worth your, it is definitely worth your time to watch.
It is the tamer of Kawajiri stuff. This is a good introduction if you want to watch any, to get into like, you know, to gradually get into the stuff he's worked on. I mean, there's also Lensman and like Highlander, but you can kind of overskip those or go back to those later.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily go with... I feel like Kawajiri has a ten... I mean, I don't really know a lot about the source of Cyber City Uedo, but I feel like Kawajiri has a tendency to do better with stuff that's less established when he gets to make a movie based on it.
Does this even have a source?
No, it doesn't. It's entirely original.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't know if there was
like he did this. Like apparently, like people were telling him, like, you know, this isn't going to make much money. He's like, dude, I don't care. I want to. Oh, this is something I want to make, and he made it anyways. And even if it doesn't get the recognition that it deserves, like it's still a good piece of work.
Did this thing make money?
Probably.
It made something
popular because they made a video game based on it.
Yeah. Wait, they did. That's cool.
That is cool.
Wait,
let's see what the game is.
Yeah, wait, what is the actual game or what system is it for? I didn't know there was a game on this.
It was a Super Famicom card, actually.
What?
Yep.
Mother, I gotta look this up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going on Google.
Yeah, I'm going on Google Chrome, like, right now.
What's up?
I'm going on. I don't know if it's on freaking. God.
Well, okay, Wikipedia says there's a.
It was a Japan only release, and it was this that entirely original story. I mean,
that's pretty cool.
What I'm looking at says it was for the TurboGrafx-16.
Huh. I don't know. When you say that, and I just picture it being, I could not conceive of it being that early a game. When you told me about it, I just thought of it being this PS2 game on Reflex. But now that you do, I'm picturing it being like a reskin of Final Fight. Where Goal is Mike Hagger.
Well, of course.
You know,
you're right,
like,
and I'm wrong. I apologize.
A lot of like TurboGrafx-16 made a lot of these anime themed video game stuff. Like, there's a Soul Bianca TurboGrafx-16 game. There's a Bubblegum Crisis TurboGrafx-16 game.
Rama would have.
But there's also the SNES Rama fighting game that we got in the States, which I own that.
I played that once because a friend of mine owned it.
I played it once too, and I think it's in my storage box. I need to play this now. I just need to get an emulator to play TurboGrafx-16 games, and I'll definitely try this out.
Getting TurboGrafx-16 itself probably not a big deal. TurboGrafx-16 CD. Little difference.
You could get an emulator pretty easy.
Yeah, apparently I've got a Pioneer Laser Active that I can swap out with a TurboGrafx-16 and a Sega Genesis in it.
Oh, cool.
That I got for like really cheap, but it's like worth $600-$700 if I decide to resell it, but I won't.
I mean,
but I need to find like a TurboGrafx attachment to it, which I think that's going to be probably a couple $100. But whatever. If I happen to find one of the cheap somewhere, then that'd be awesome.
Oh.
But I think we're done with this episode. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah,
I think we're done.
Yeah.
Closing remarks. You want me to go first?
Yeah, sure.
Just fall in love. Josh, what's your closing remark?
Is Josh here? Oh, he says
RIP CW for kids.
Okay.
which apparently ended today.
Sorry, what? I'll ask you about that later.
The CW for Kids is that cartoon block that replaced Kids WB, and now it's being replaced by something else.
Yeah.
Well, that was to be expected.
Block. Yeah. Joe, what's your closing remark?
If you're looking for a fun little three-episode OVA, Cyber City 080 is a pretty good pick. It's got good design. It's got some pretty solid action. It's got some likable characters. I'd watch it.
The man, Double Gomez.
That is my new permanent name now forever, and I'm loving it. No, Cyber City 080. Pretty great. I mean, I loved it. I don't know why, but I'm really partial to Son Goku for some reason. I don't know. Maybe he's the kind of character I just expect out of Kawajiri now, but that's kind of whatever. But, I mean, it's just something that I feel anyone should really watch if they like anything that can be considered action.
Yeah. Steve?
Remember, if it's not on the TARDIS, it doesn't exist.
And John?
Just the usual Ron Paul.
Next week is going to be Ninja Scroll, so stay tuned for that.
Yes! I have more to say about that.
There's a lot to say about that.
There is a lot to say about Ninja Scroll. We're going into the thicker Kawajiri territory. And
oh, yeah.
You can, Jake, did you tell your story about me trying to justify you watching Ninja Scroll?
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. It's only got, like, one rape scene.
That's right.
Have any of you seen the series of Ninja Scroll?
I've never seen the series. I heard that it did not live up to its successor, although I don't really know if that's true or not.
I don't know if we
should. I haven't seen it either.
Maybe we should see that and review it sometime, too.
It might be worth.
If I was
like
to pick up a physical copy of Cyber City, I was going to say if I was to pick up a physical copy of Cyber City 080 on the TurboGrafx, it's $86 on Amazon.
It looks like it's a visual novel kind of thing.
Really? Yeah, some of these are kind of different. Like the Sol Bianca games they had, it was like kind of like a top view, like
mission completed.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cybernauts Cast. Do you want more of what we got? If so, check us out over at our website at cybernautscast.wordpress.com. If you wish to leave us an email on, well, anything, then shoot one over at cybernautscast@gmail.com. Check us out on iTunes and leave a review, why don't you? We'll see you next week, same Cybernauts time, same Cybernauts channel.
Madonna! Double table! Where are you going, pal?
Next time you have a chance to kill someone, don't hesitate.
Thanks for the advice.
Who are you, then?
Just a fly in the ointment, Hans. The monkey in the wrench. A pain in the ass.
You have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you? Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequin shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.